Hello, and welcome to the Cheap Home Grow Podcast, a show for individuals that want to learn more about growing cannabis indoors. This is a podcast dedicated to helping you with your indoor growing adventure. You'll learn how to grow your own and not have to rely on others for your medicine. The Cheap Home Grow Podcast will also feature timely interviews with cannabis industry veterans shaping the culture and politics of cannabis. All right, here is your host, Shane McCormick, and the Cheap Home Grow Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Shane McCormick from the Cheap Home Grow Podcast, interviewing Jack from Jack's Greenstock on Instagram. He was on the show last month. We talked about growing in his coat closet, but now he's back on the show, and we are going to be talking about cannabis hash. Jack, if you would, just give a very brief introduction about yourself, like last time, and then we'll go into talking about cannabis hash.
All right. So, yeah, my name is Jack. I run the Jack Greenstock page on Instagram. I'm currently growing some tester seeds for Humboldt Seed Organization. And today we're going to talk about hash or hashish, one of my favorite forms of cannabis, which is basically an extract that's made by pulling the resin heads away from the plant matter on the flower of the cannabis. And there's a few different ways that this can be achieved. So we're going to talk about the two main solventless versions that are dry sift and ice water extraction or bubble hash.
Okay. All right. Okay. Great, man. Great. Well, listen, thank you for being on the show again, and we certainly look forward to what you have to say here tonight.
Hey, great to be back. Thank you for having me again. I got a lot of very positive feedback, actually, from all across the world. As we talked about a little bit off the air, it's kind of cool to see how widespread the audience is, and it's nice to be able to help people out across, literally across the entire world, because cannabis is such a well-loved and powerful medicine that people really are receptive to hearing more and more about it and getting in touch with what's available and what's out there.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, absolutely there. I mean, I have... You know, it's kind of surprising because I have listeners, and I didn't even know that I have listeners. I have listeners in Australia, in the UK, in Dublin, in Germany, Spain. I mean, it's pretty crazy how, you know, I guess if you throw out some information there, it's pretty wild how many people can listen to what you have to say.
Well, yeah, and there's so little of it, actually. There's a lot out there, but there's it's tough to find it all in one place, like a podcast where it's consolidated and talking about one topic specifically, like growing in a coat closet, which someone might want to get into, but they have to find 20 different resources and piecemeal it all together themselves, and some of it might be outdated or just incorrect. Right. And to get the information from people that are currently active growing in 2018 and doing what we're talking about, you know, it's fresh in our minds, and we've tried stuff that doesn't work, and we can tell you what does and doesn't work. So it's, I love the podcast format. I always have, not just for cannabis, but for just educational purposes in general. There's a lot of things that can be learned. So I'm extremely happy to have the opportunity to come on and talk about all this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, and also, I mean, what you brought up there about, you know, what and what doesn't work, I mean, that might make for another good show in terms of what doesn't work in certain situations. I mean, I think that might be something that people can appreciate as well.
Yeah, for sure. And like growing pains, stuff that we've learned along the way from both our perspectives on sort of grow fails and grow rescues, because whether we've messed up ourselves or helped a friend who has, you know, just gotten into it or has been growing for a while, you know, everyone makes mistakes or they get subjected to something they've never seen before. You know, if you've never seen a certain mold or fungus or insect problem, it can be tough to address it unless you have the proper information. So it's nice that there's more and more information out there and people like you are helping make it available to the masses.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that, Jack. But getting to the point of cannabis hash or hashish, the first thing that I would like to bring up is the Frenchie Canolio cannabis scoring sheet. Now, what exactly is that, and how would one use that to, I guess, make hashish?
So the Frenchie Canoli scoring breakdown, it sort of shows one a way to have an idea or understanding of the quality of the hash that you are getting from, whether it's your dealer, dispensary, delivery service, however you source your own hash. If you make it yourself, there's going to be a way to see how good or bad it is. And the very top standard, I'll say, is called the melt test. And I'm going to go through, there's about 10 different categories and then 3 lab tests. And those are all weighted to an ultimate score of 200 points. This was made by Frenchie Canoli, who is sort of an old school OG. He's a hash maker. He's sort of gone through the process similar to myself and many other hash makers who have tried a lot of different stuff, from dry sift to ice water extraction to, you know, peeling up the keef out of the bottom of your grinder and pressing it to a radiator. Over time, that heat and pressure will make yourself a little brick of keef. And so Frenchie is, I would say, on the forefront of making the best hash on the planet right now. Like, if you go on his Instagram, it's Frenchie Canoli. It's like French with a Y at the end, and then Canoli, just like you'd spell it. And he has what are my favorite style of hash called the Temple Ball, which is an extremely specific style of hash that is it looks like a charas or like live resin ball that you can see made. It's sort of an ancient style. It was the Moroccan hash back in the day when people would rub their hands together when being around live plants. They'd get all that live resin and make a ball, and it was termed a temple ball. And Frenchie's been able to do this without, you know, getting all the sweat and grease and skin cells from your hands into the hash, so you're not really smoking contaminant. You're smoking a much more pure hash that resembles both the figure and the fact that it will hold its sphere, and the potency, and that it's just absolutely dynamite. You take one hit and it just will keep you medicated for hours. And some of the best forms of cannabis that I've been able to come across, like the third form, I was writing down the types of extracts for cannabis that is solventless that I'll use, is called rosin, which can be made from both flower by pressing it, or with hash. You can press your own bubble hash and make it into rosin as well with heat and pressure. So a little bit about Frenchie's scale, starting off with melt. I was kind of talking about how melt is the first and most important part. On the scale, it's weighted a 10, and there's a 5-point scale. So you've got 0, which would mean that there's no presence of this quality. So if you had a 0 melt, that would mean if I took the hash and put a lighter to it for a few seconds, it's not going to bubble or start to physically melt. It'll just sit there and take it, and it'll maybe char and become like a black, goopy, resinous material, like your keef in the bottom of your grinder would be considered like a non-melting hash. It'd be a 0, 0 to 1.
Okay.
But as you move up the scale, we have like 2, 3, and 4. Those are getting into your half melt, where you're going to light it and you'll see a little bit of sizzle and a bubble on the hash. But if you try to take it and dab it on a nail, it's going to leave a lot of gunk on your nail, like a black residual. That's the excess contaminants, which are typically just plant matter.
Plant matter.
And the higher you get up on that scale, like 4 and 5, the optimum or value is very pronounced. That's when you're having less and less contaminant, and you're going to see more of a melt. So it will dab and vaporize perfectly. So when you look at the nail after you take a dab, there's not going to be anything left over. It'll just be perfectly clean, as if, you know, you couldn't even tell someone hit it.
Oh, really? So, all right. So in terms of, you know, a person taking a hit, if it's clean, that basically means that it was either a 4 or 5 on the Canoli scale.
Yes, it's talking about as far as the melt, you could even put it, there's like a glass, you could test anything from cocaine to cannabis extractions to a million other things, but there's little glasses that can heat up that will show you the exact temperature something melts at.
Right.
And most people aren't going to use that, but I mean, like the hot plate or anything, you'll see, some of it will melt completely off and vaporize into the air, and some will leave like a residue behind on, say, if you have like a wax or parchment paper that is able to withstand the heat, higher than the hash would before it melts, you can see that it'll leave like a residue, which is just the leaf or plant matter.
Right.
And so I'm going to talk a little bit now about how the extraction methods take place. There's two main styles. One is called dry sifting, where the individual can take either trim or buds. So there's two things that you'll hear a lot in the cannabis industry, like nug run, which means like full buds, or trim run, which means just the leaf. The cannabis leaf, especially in flower, has a lot of trichomes on it, but it's not as potent as the calyxes and nugs, where when you grind it up and smoke it, it's going to be giving you a much more potent effect, where if you ground up and smoke the leaf, you might have a very, very minimal effect. But when you take 150 grams of leaf and you spin it in a bucket of water, for example, the water is able to pull the resin off of the leaf. And when you're spinning it in the bucket, all the trichomes or the, you know, parts of the cannabis that give the user the effects are separated from the leaf. And then there's a bag or bubble bag, which is used to pull those trichomes out. And those bags all have different numbers on them called micron, or different lines per inch. And that just tells you how many lines per inch are present in that bag. So you'll see stuff like a number 25 bag, a 45 bag, a 70 bag, a 120 bag, a 160 bag, and a 190 bag. And so all those numbers are telling you is how many lines per inch are present in the bag. And there's a ton of different ways. I mean, you could go on YouTube and type ice water extraction for cannabis, and you'll see 30 different people doing it 30 different ways. And so I've really tried to look at the final results and see who's producing what I would consider the best, not just by my own standards and ratings. Like, I've tried people who produce the hash in certain styles. There's Frenchie Cannoli offers a workshop. He's actually about to open one here in San Diego. I'm not going to be able to make it for personal reasons, but a lot of people do attend those, and he shows you the style that he uses to achieve that temple ball. And I can sort of break that down a little bit for people here on the podcast. But before we do that, I want to go a little bit more into the other categories, and then we'll get back into the styles. So melt is first and foremost. That's the most important. And we got a 5-point scale we talked about. I just want to read them all off because I might have forgot. It's little to no evidence is one. Moderate evidence is two. Value is obvious is three. Four is value is pronounced. And five is optimum. And then the categories are melt, stability, appearance, aroma, which is like the nose or smell, taste, smoothness, body, complexity or balance, intensity slash duration, and then overall pleasure or uniqueness. Now, I wrote down notes for some of those, the ones that, to me, I thought might need a little bit of explaining. The first one would be stability. Stability is telling us how well the hash is holding its shape in a higher temperature or like room temperature. You'll see rosin a lot of the time is recommended you store it in your refrigerator because it's very sort of sappy and syrupy.
Sure.
That's when you press a plant with the high temperature between two plates, you get sort of like a, it looks like BHO, but it's much healthier because you're not, you know, using solvent, and there's not going to be that risk of any residual that wasn't cooked off. Where, you know, hash at room temperature doesn't need to be stored in a refrigerator because it has the ability to hold its structure. And part of that stability is going to indicate how well the hash was dried. If the hash was well dried and it was using good techniques, then it should hold its stability. So as I talked about earlier, if you have a temple ball, it should look like a ball at the beginning of the day and at the middle of the day and at the end of the day, it might lose a little bit of its structure and sink into itself, but it shouldn't turn into a puddle if you're sitting in a little glass on the table,
right,
where the stuff that wasn't dried as well will not be a ball by the end of the day. If it gets warmed up, you'll literally see it turn into a sappy puddle, and it just deflates gradually throughout the day. I just saw somebody post it almost like they thought they were like bragging about like, oh, look at how quality my hash is. But I think it actually shows a little bit of poor drying technique that is happening.
So, I mean, I'm not a hash, expert.
Connoisseur,
I'm not. But I guess to put this in layman's terms, if it holds its shape for one day, then you know you have pretty good hash. If it doesn't, then you know that you did something wrong.
So that's, going back to the scale, this is weighted as far as, like, melt is weighted as a 10, stability is rated as a 2, and so are all the other things that I'm about to mention. From stability all the way down to uniqueness, all of those are rated at 2, and it stays 2 until we get to the lab tests. Lab tests are rated at a 4, so multiply that by 5 for a total of, like, 20 possible points. Say your hash tested at like 90% total count cannabinoids, which is extremely high. You might say 5 out of 5 for optimum. And that would be multiplied by 4 to give you 20. And then that's added to your total score of the possibility out of 200. And same with the spectrum, it's looking for the different types of cannabinoids. There's not just THC, there's THC. A, there's CBD, there's CBG, there's a whole bunch of different types of cannabinoids that are beneficial that we're now learning more and more about, but we're going to keep it to the hash before we get into, like, the chemistry of all of it. And then the last one is terpene content for lab tests, which is rated at 4.
Okay.
So stability, if it stays stable all day, you know that you've got something that might be, say, a 5, an optimum in stability, but that could only give you a total of 10 points out of 200. So then you need to go to appearance. So if it's stable and it stays like a brick all day, but it's green and you're looking at it and it looks like a powdery green, you know it's not, I would say that's like not present or little to no evidence, because that appearance is not indication that it's high quality. And a high quality indication is going to be more like a light tan to a sandy gold. The greenness that you're seeing in a lot of hash is contaminants from the leaf being either damaged or beaten up too much in the process of making the hash.
Really?
So the two styles are, you can basically rub it through a screen, which is dry sifting. They make like, you'll see it looks like a wooden box with a screen in the middle. And you take the cannabis and basically rub it across the top of the screen. And then underneath there's another screen that catches all the trichomes that drop through that. And that's basically how dry sift is done. And, ice water extraction, I mentioned earlier, you throw all of the cannabis, whether it's your nug or your leaf, into a bucket with water and ice. You mix it up, whether you're using like a power drill or an egg beater. Some people have these mini washing machines that spin it around. But there's a bunch of different ways to make ice water hash, but however you go about making it, it just depends on how intensely you're whipping it. I see people use metal egg beaters, and I think that creates more contaminant because you're breaking the leaf. The metal blades are hitting that leaf, and instead of spinning the water and pulling the trichomes away from the leaf using gravity and the coldness of the water, the cold is making the resin more stiff so that it's more likely to flick off of the leaf. Like when you have hot resin, it gets really sticky, and you'll notice that if you see like your rosin, for example, I talked about, it's best to keep it in the refrigerator. That's so it doesn't get super runny. You can dab it more easily. It sticks on your tools more easily. You can get it on your fingers without it soaking into your skin.
Right.
But if you let it sit out all day, rosin will start to stick to your fingers, and it's extremely messy if you try and put it on your joints and bowl topper. If you pull away the thing that you're putting it on the bowl with, you're going to pick up half of the flower on top of the bowl. Where hash, you can basically scrape it, and it's going to stay solid, and you can play with it between your fingers and drop it on the bowl, and it'll be able to not get that super stickiness. And the ice in the water makes it less and less sticky, So you don't have to actually break the leaf apart. You have to use gravity and use water to spin it very fast. And that's making basically the trichomes fly loose and hit the walls of the bucket and then drop down and be caught into that micron. So the only part of when you're making ice water hash, you're using like a silicone bag. And the very bottom of the bag is a mesh net, basically, that allows the water to pull through but not the trichomes. And the first one it goes through is what we call like the junk bag. It'll be like 190. So all the little stuff falls through, but it catches most of the leaf, stem, and garbage. You just pull that out. You're not going to get any hash from that. But then your next one might be a 120 bag. And that might have some hash, which might be like half melt. It will, if you try to put it in a dab, you'll leave a little bit of black contaminant on your nail with that. Mm-hmm. But it is good if you smoke it on top of a bowl, or if you take that, what I'll say, 3 to 4 star hash, and you press it into a rosin, a hash rosin, then it might have a higher melt quality. Hmm. It turns the lower quality hash into something that becomes a little bit more dabbable.
Oh, really?
Except when you press it, it takes away some of the contaminants in that process. So moving on, we have aroma or nose. The smell should smell like one of the most distinct characteristics of the strain. My most recent bubble hash that I made was Blue Dream, and one of my phenotypes had a very lemon and pepper scent, and the bubble hash came out extremely lemon-scented, like very, very lemony. And that's a good indication. Like, I would say the smell was optimum. It smelled like lemon pledge when I opened my hash after I had cured it.
Okay.
But if there's no smell at all, you know, I'd get a zero, not present. If there's a little bit, or, you know, moderate would be, it maybe it smells, but it doesn't smell just like the strain that it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all going to give you a little bit of a knock on your score. Taste. Mm-hmm. Taste is a easy one. You know, it doesn't need more explaining. Mm-hmm. So taste is just personal preference for a lot of people. Everyone likes different stuff. Some people like gassy OGs and some people like fruity stuff. So that's just on whoever is the user. Going back to appearance for a second, one of the things about appearance is on Instagram, if you just look at a picture, it might be difficult because you're not manipulating the hash. It might look like a perfectly like gold or brown temple ball, but until you see it broken apart or manipulated, it might be difficult to see if there is any sort of contamination on the inside. Because by the maker of the hash can sort of hide or present it in a better way than it actually is by processing it well. So you can sort of make junkier stuff look good, for lack of a better term, processing it the right way.
Right. Well, I mean, how, you know, as a consumer, I mean, how would you, I guess, be able to look at that and figure it out and say, okay, well, yeah, this looks good, this looks great, but in reality, it probably isn't good. I mean, like, as a person, you know, like myself, that isn't all that familiar with hash, I mean, how could I possibly figure that out?
To avoid getting duped, I guess, some places it's all different. Like, if you go into a dispensary, some places will crack open a jar and they'll stir it around for you with a metal poker. And say, like, yo, look, here are, you can see it's shining. It's all trichomes on the inside. It's not just pressed gunk. It's not garbage. Some will even take out a lighter. If they have a very, like, it's sort of like wine, you know. If you meet a sommelier at a good restaurant, they can talk you through the ins and outs of all the subtle notes of the wine and let you really appreciate it. But if you just go into a place like McDonald's or something and, they happen to carry it, but they don't know what the hell it even is. It's like $2 chuck, but they're trying to sell it like it's a top shelf bottle or something. Like, it's one of those situations. It all depends on where you're getting it. But when you look at it, you want it, like I said, it should be a sandy to a gold. What you want to avoid is any elements of green or like dark, deep, deep, dark brown or black. Once it starts getting into those colors, most often it's just going to be, you know, other sorts of contaminants, whether it's like dirt, dust, stuff that was somehow got in there in the process of making it. Maybe they didn't have a clean workstation or whatever. It could be anything, you know. When you look at hash, I would say
like Frenchie Cannoli's page has a lot of good examples. So for anybody who is looking, if you want to find like a great catalog of examples for what to look for, him and a few others, there's a guy, Harambee Grows. He has some really good examples of hash. It's got that nice tan, lighter color, and you'll never see any of that green, foamy, contaminated water or anything because they're not whipping it too much. Frenchie's first wash with ice water hash, he does for 30 seconds. Some people do, you know, one wash for 20 minutes on their first wash. And when you're doing that, you're beating the leaf up too much. So instead of that first bag, the 180 or whatever, the junk bag, catching the stems and the leaves, it's catching the stems and the leaves, but it's letting some of the smaller stem and leaf that you just chopped up through into the good bags where the hash is supposed to be. So sometimes it's like less is more. But with sativa, for example, sativas are harder to get the resin off of the bud. So your first wash, like I did 30 seconds for my first wash, a minute and a half for my second wash, 3 minutes for my third, 5 minutes for my fourth, and then like 7-8 minutes for my fifth. And I just keep going until I get a big pull. Like each strain is different. Sometimes you can wash 10 times and still be getting stuff on your 10th run. But eventually you'll have a really big dump where you're going to get most of your yield. And then after that one, you usually get like one more and then almost none left after that. So it's a fun process. It's very elbow grease sort of. You got to get in there. And I use a power drill with a paint mixer. Mm-hmm. And the paint mixer that I use is like a silicone or like rubber paddle. So it doesn't break up the flower at all. It's just getting the water spinning at a high rate. And I make sure I don't overfill the bucket, so the drill actually doesn't have to hit the leaf at all. It's just spinning the water around as fast as I can get it moving to ensure the resin is being shaken off of the bud. Frenchie had a good example. He said it's sort of like a fruit tree. The most loose resin is like a low-hanging fruit. So when you shake the tree, that first pull you're getting, those fruit are the ripest. So that's the ripest trichomes. Your first wash... if you see a lot of places I've seen in like Michigan, their medical market is really good about the labels. They'll say like first wash 70 micron and you can go buy hash and they'll tell you like what wash it came out of. And then I think that's awesome. Most places you're not going to see that. You'll see like 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, 6-star. And then it's the label that the hash maker themselves puts on it to associate their different qualities. Because you do have a bunch of different bags. You don't throw away the low quality stuff. I call my 1-2-star bubble hash, you know, cooking grade. I use that to make edibles with. And it's not like it's bad. It's just it's not going to smoke well on a nail. And it might not smoke as well on a joint or on top of your bowl. But it has its effectiveness in its uses as well.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, talking about washing, and just going back to that for a little bit, I mean, how long should a individual wait between each washing?
As you can. So the best thing I could tell anybody who wants to start making bubble hash is buy yourself a set of bags. They're pretty cheap. You can get them on Amazon. If you want to get the name brand, I'd say Bubble Bags are like a reputable brand. They have a few different, they have like a intro level and then a higher grade level. But Frenchie Cannoli has actually made a 1 hour long how to make hash YouTube tutorial. So if you Google Frenchie Cannoli hash making, it's the first video that comes up. It's an hour long. He's standing outside and he has this little blue and white tub. It looks like a washing machine. He walks you through his whole entire process. It's basically he throws it in this washing machine with ice and water, spins it around. It dumps it out of this hose into – he has like a three-bucket system that I've actually copied and emulated. You take like three Home Depot buckets and you cut the bottoms off of two of them so that – you know, you can put the bags around a bucket top instead of having like five bags on one bucket and stacking them. You stack them on the different rims of the different buckets so they can slide apart more easily. Which that might sound really complicated, but if they watch the video, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just basically a way to make the filters pull apart a little more easily so that you're not like prying and working your fingers really hard. Cause they fit really snugly around a 5 gallon bucket. So that way it can hold water because you could be potentially pouring 5 gallons of water, which is very heavy, and you don't want them to snap off and fall into the bottom of the bucket, which will ruin your process and contaminate the hash.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
So continuing on with the categories, I guess. I know we were talking about washing, actually. Sorry, I'll finish up. What was your question again? I want to completely answer that.
No, you did.
So the between washes. How much time? You want to do it as quickly as possible. I would say you can do a whole run in under an hour once you get good at it, but I would set aside like 2 to 3 hours your first time just because you're going to be like fumbling around. I need to wash. You're washing the bud of the resin, but then each time you go through, I have like rubbing alcohol and a sink or a hose nearby that I can clean each bag, because if you don't clean each bag, then the resin that's sticking on there won't allow the smaller resin to pop through. And ideally you want to have each resin head in its own bag, because like the 70 micron and the 45 micron are really good hash. You don't want the 45 getting stuck in your 180 bag because you didn't wash your 180 bag. Sure. And that's something, like I said, some people just do one 20-minute wash and they're like, oh, here's my hash. Because when you spin it for 20 minutes, a lot comes out and they're satisfied with it. They're like, oh, I just had trim anyway. I got a few grams of hash. Cool. But it's like green, funky, foamy, nasty stuff. They probably don't know how to dry it.
Right.
And they're not doing all the steps they should do. It pays to do the research. I mean, you're putting potentially hundreds of grams, whether it's trim or bud, into it. You're not going to get hundreds of grams back. You're going to get, 10 to 20% yield. And that's not smart to do if you're not going to get 10 to 20% yield of good quality stuff.
Right.
So
right.
You want to make sure you're making all the steps of the process go as smoothly as possible. And when there's a guy who's been doing it for years and years, who's tried dry sift, and I'm not talking about myself, I'm talking about Frenchie, he's like won cannabis cups, and he is very, very well recognized in the community for being like one of the top most knowledgeable people. And he's on the scientific forefront. He's giving speeches. He's, holding workshops and stuff because he's such a master of his craft that the fact that he gives it away for free on YouTube is actually a blessing for all of us. Because it is something that's really easy to do once you know how to do it, but I still see people on Instagram with green fucking hash. And I'm like, dudes, how long did you whip it for? And I'll ask, just like, not trying to be mean, but I'm curious. I'm a scientist at heart. I studied psychology, but I love this idea of the scientific method. What is the best? Ask the questions, write it down, and figure out the process. Because if somebody's telling you spin it 30 seconds and then spin it a minute and a half and spin it 3 minutes, I think they have a reason for it. Like, oh, the first wash, you're going to get the low-hanging fruit. The second wash, you're shaking the tree a little bit harder to get that other stuff. And the later washes, you have to spin it longer and longer because that other stuff is really clinging to the flower, to the leaf. And that makes sense to me. You know, I can look at a trichome and understand its texture and the way a resin head works. It's a ball at the top of a stalk, and you're basically trying to pop that resin head off. And a good way to do it is to either rub it against a screen that's going to break it away from its stalk and have it drop through and catch it onto another nice clean screen like dry sift does, or using ice water hash. I watched Weeds when I was younger, and I was like wondering when they threw a bunch of weed in the pool, like, why was all that weed ruined? Like, can't you just dry it out? And the reason is because once it gets wet, water acts sort of as a solvent. It wants to pull the resin off of the flower. And not that just going to a pool has another range of issues. There's chlorine and a whole bunch of chemicals, and that would ruin it. But I was just wondering, like, what does water do to cannabis? And I've now figured out it's a good way to extract the most medicinal part. I mean, for lack of any better term, when we're talking about the medicine, people are always talking about THC, CBD, and all of those, elements. They're not talking about chlorophyll. And chlorophyll is what you're smoking a lot of the time when you're smoking a green plant, whether it's cannabis or, any plant that you could roll into. You could smoke mint, and there's going to be chlorophyll in there, and it might not be very pleasant. You know, we're smoking cannabis because it has the THC and the CBD. And that's what you're getting from removing the resin from the flower portion.
Right. Exactly. All right. Wow.
So continuing on, we just talked about rinsing and taste recovered. Smoothness is something I want to get into. Smoothness is largely indicated by, again, it's the process. If you make bad hash, it's going to be really harsh. You're going to hit it, you're going to cough your lungs out, and it's not going to be a fun process. One of the things that affects smoothness the most for hash is not being dry all the way through. A lot of people don't understand the process of drying hash. I personally have tried a few different methods, and some work and some don't, but I think it's really important to get as much of the water out of the hash after you get it from the bag as possible, and then from that point, spreading it very thin on either like cardboard or parchment paper and laying it out. Frenchie Canola uses those like white racks you'd see in a closet on the top that people put like their sweaters and shoes and stuff on up above where you'd hang your clothes, because it allows air to come above and below, and he uses parchment paper. I see a lot of other people use cardboard because cardboard acts as a natural desiccant or, you know, dehumidifier. It takes the moisture away from the hash just naturally. I'm not sure why it has that property, but I know this to be true because I've experimented on my own hash, and it helps it dry much quicker.
Huh.
Like, I use the little Amazon boxes you get, cut them up into little sheets, and then I shave the hash into flakes, and it dries really well onto the cardboard. It helps dry quicker and more evenly. And then at that point, you can take those flakes and then press them back together into a ball. But if you put it into a ball right after you pulled it out of the ice water, you're going to get mold, and a few days later, you'll have some furry hash, which would be bad. Most people don't let it get moldy, but they will have water content, which both negatively affects the user because they are paying for less cannabinoid and actual just water content. Like if you have a wet hash, it's going to weigh more, just like a wet bud. When you harvest the bud, it can weigh up to five times more. Like if I harvest 1,000 grams of bud, it might be 200 grams dry.
Right.
And the same goes for hash. You know, it might cut itself in half as far as the weight goes over the drying process, depending on how much moisture was squeezed out when you laid it wet versus when you laid it dry.
Okay.
And, yeah, so that water, the moisture content, I've seen a lot of lab testing for that with flower, and I hope to see that in the future with hash as well because I know it really hurts my lungs. Like, I can't smoke hash that has too much water content. It becomes so harsh that after a hit, I'll know it's just like I can't keep hitting it or else I'm going to cough to the point where you almost vomit.
Oh,
and
really?
That's not fun. Yeah, it gets really, really bad. Like the dirtiest bong hit you've ever taken almost. You know, it's one of those sort of experiences. It's just unpleasant. Jeez. So it's good to make sure people understand the drying process. And, like, this is one of those things, like, maybe they think I'm being extreme, the listeners, or maybe they're going to become paranoid now and really go through their process and be diligent and make sure they have good quality hash. Because to me, like I said, I grow medically, and that's how I'm able to do it legally. I've been seeing the same doctor since I moved out to California, who's a legitimate, you know, MD, and they have consistently year after year recommended that I use medical cannabis. Even when I've been dealing with my car accident, you know, I fractured my C5, other doctors were trying to put me on a muscle relaxer, which I took initially, but I was having, again, negative side effects. And I just went and started researching more muscle relaxing strains and found a few that really eased my pains. And I just have continuously been finding that this is my best medicine. So that's why I take it so serious when the fans who listen to your show are maybe questioning, is it worth that extra time? Is it worth, you know, doing 6 washes instead of 1 20-minute wash? Like, I'll smoke a little green hash. It's like, you don't want to smoke that green hash. Trust me. I've done it. I've done it because I didn't know better. I've done it because people were lazy. I've done it because it was all that was available. But now that I have better resources and the technology to do it well and cheaply, I mean, ice water extraction, you're talking like the bubble bags might cost you like under $30 on Amazon, I think, for a 5-gallon version.
That's
it. Buy yourself a few 5-gallon buckets at Home Depot. I think they're only a few bucks each.
Right.
So, like, you're definitely not going to spend even $100 to get yourself started. Like, you don't need a power drill. You don't need the washer. You can mix it with a spoon. You can mix it with an egg beater. But the power tools help just make the process go along a little easier, so you're not using so much elbow grease. I've seen people mix it with a wooden paddle in the 20-gallon buckets. You know, like there's just
How the hell do you do that?
It's just a matter of getting it moving. You know, it's shaking it around that ice is cold enough and jostling it. Resin wants to fall off the bud, and that's why ice water extraction. I think. I mean, Frenchie did dry sift for so many years. He was very good at it. I've seen some of his old work, and it's just interesting to see somebody who's in the field switch, having done both, knowing that both are out there. Like, if you show a preference towards one, I think my thought is it would have an indication that it may be just better. For some people, they might not believe that because, you know, the whole drying process, dry sift hash, you don't need to go through all the crazy process of drying because you could just smoke that right then and there. You could take those resin heads and put it on top of a bowl, or if you have the right micron, you could dab it. If you press it together right and get everything lined up, dry sift hash is wonderful smoke. I just think that so often, because the style it's used to make, you're kind of like caveman grinding leaf onto a screen. It's not as easy to back off. It's a lot easier to push too hard and get contaminant. Where with ice water hash, I can say my power drill spins the same amount of revolutions per minute and that I am guaranteed, you know, 3 minutes is 3 minutes. I'm not going to accidentally press my fingers across too hard or too soft or, you know, bounce it too aggressively or not aggressively enough because every strain is different. And that's the thing with ice water. If you do 20 washes, you'll find that the one strain might be a 20 wash strain. I've never, ever seen one go above 10. But just for the example, it's one of those things you learn as you go, and it helps you learn more about the medicine that you're growing, too, because, you know, indicas, like I said, wash easier, and maybe you had more of an indica pheno than you knew because they dumped all of its hash in the early stages or something like that.
Sure.
So moving on, we are going to go into a category that is a little bit more difficult, so I wrote down a note from Frenchie's site. It's
true.
Body. We just talked about smoothness, and that's pretty self-explanatory. I didn't really deep on it. But so after smoothness comes body. And body is beyond the initial smoothness. It's talking about the taste of the buds and the smoke and the terpene profile. So this is a good indication of showing how much terpenes are actually present. A lot of people are really hype on just seeing like, oh, this has 90% THC. I want to buy that. It's got the highest percentage at this shop. It's tested. It's got to be stronger. But more people like myself, I was years ago buying like 93%, 94%. It's called like Red Seal Nectar. I don't even know what process they use to extract it, but it was 94% THC. And I was like, oh, you know, this is going to get me super medicated. And I was all happy and tried it. It was good. But I've realized once I started trying flower resin, I was smoking stuff that was like 35 to 45% and feeling way more medicated and way better. And I was like, what is going on? And then I started learning about terpenes and how important terpenes are to the effect of your medicine. So when you're isolating or, you know, distilling for THC only, you lose some of the magic that might be in like piney. So if like Blue Dream helps me focus, for example, during the day, and I want that focus, I'd be better off with like a flower rosin or a hash that has a full spectrum of cannabinoids versus just a THC distillate cart that might be 99% THC. You know, you might think that's going to be the stoniest thing ever. I'm going to get so medicated, get so high, whatever. But in reality, it comes down to what's best for each individual. And THC alone doesn't give me the best effects, both like as far as strength, like even when I'm trying to party and just feel fucked up on the weekends, I have nothing to do and I'm just trying to have fun and get stress relief and relax. Yeah. I have a strain called Banana Split, and I can't get shit done when I smoke this stuff. It is so strong. I don't even know what it tests at. It's definitely not the highest test percentage I have, but it knocks me off my feet. Like, this stuff's unreal, and it's all about the terpenes. It's not just that THC. So when we're talking about body in the score, it's talking about sort of that terpene profile. You're going to taste, when I blow out, if I taste that lemon in my mouth for seconds later still. Complexity, I think, is the next one. complexity slash balance. And again, I had to write a note because Frenchy is, I believe he's actually French, like by nature. That's why I got his nickname. Mm-hmm. But he's a little hard to understand. He even has subtitles in that YouTube video I was talking about in certain parts to help you understand what he's saying. But like, I think part of these last few categories get a little bit frou-frou, I'll say, maybe, or like personal preference-y and like maybe more mysterious and not so scientific. Mm-hmm. Like balance is harmony of all the elements in the smoke.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear it. You kind of broke
balance.
It.
So complexity or balance is the harmony of all the elements in the smoke. So I think for that 0 to 5, you're saying like, how does the melt work with the stability, with the appearance, with the aroma, with the taste? I could be wrong, but that's what I took from balance. Balance is like, how well does everything work together? Is it, you know, so it melts, but does it smell good? Et cetera. It's like the overall balance of everything. So intensity and duration, I actually thought it was talking about like the intensity or duration of the high or the effect the medicine gives you, but it's the intensity or duration of the flavors, how long they linger in the mouth after your exhalation. And it says that this is a good indication of the terpene concentration. So similar to the body, that's like the initial taste. The intensity slash duration is how long you have it, like if you burp later on in the day or if you like cough later, you still have that sometimes in the back of your throat, that taste lingering there. Sure. Some strains do it and some strains don't. And I'm finding out now with looking at the scale and doing a little more research that those terp monsters are the ones that are leaving that lingering taste. And a lot of strains don't have that. And it's sort of a little note that I never really even thought about until looking at the scale, that that's like a quality that you could rate it at. But again, it's only 2 weight. So the most you can get is 10 points out of 200 for that. So like if it lingers a really long time, that might be a 10. But if it doesn't linger at all, it's like you're not losing a bunch. You could still get a 190 out of 200 as far as the score goes.
Yeah, right. So it doesn't – so basically it doesn't really mean all that much.
It's just one small part of a much larger picture. So okay. I really like the scale, and the reason I sent it over to you and we talked about it a little off air, and it's kind of what's guiding our show, is it has so much indication of what's important about hash in its categories. Because, you know, melt isn't something you're going to look at when you're talking about flower. You're going to look at, like, do I have white ash or is it more gray or black? Which is going to be a good indication of, one, moisture content, and two, how well it was flushed. If you're growing with, like, nutrients, when you scale back towards the end of the harvest for flush and give it little to no nutrients, you're letting those nutrients come out of the leaf so that you're not smoking those nutrients in your buds. It's going to create a much less harsh smoke. But in hash, you don't have that. Hash, you just have milk. And it tells you a little bit about hash. And same with all these categories, you know. Aroma and taste and smoothness all are similar to flower, but stability, appearance is a whole different thing to evaluate compared to flower. And then all the other things we went over. And then finally, overall pleasure slash uniqueness. This goes almost entirely to the strain and I think how well you capture it. But it is basically the overall pleasure of the strain offered by its unique genetics. So I love Blue Dream, for example, and like how well does your hash capture that Blue Dream effect? Like Blue Dream is supposed to be long lasting and you should feel it in your body, but also feel it really up in your head. It's like a relaxed body, but really stimulated and active mind. And if that translates, then that's something that you're going to be really happy with. Sometimes it doesn't translate because maybe you don't get the full spectrum. The reason that Frenchy does his hash the way he does it is that the bags he's pulling from give you a full spectrum. He uses 45 and 70, I believe. And then those two bags, when you combine them, as he does, to make the temple ball, and then ultimately the temple ball is allowing you to squeeze the excess moisture out of the hash and bring it up to that really super superior quality. Okay. And once you do that, it just is amazing at how much you can capture a strain. But if you don't, say I just use the 40 micron. Those are smaller resin heads,
right.
And I think that they're typically associated with sativa. and it's going to be a headier strain. So, like, if I did a really sleeper strain, like a cherry pie for me, makes me fall asleep. But my hash, instead of making me sleepy, makes me feel energetic and uplifted. Then I lost at that overall pleasure / uniqueness because I'm not capturing the essence of the strain in an effect.
Okay. Yeah, so it's basically, well, I mean, it's basically all subjective in terms of how the strain reacts to you on a very personal level.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I said those last few, especially, and even like taste, I guess melt is not, stability is not, a lot of them are like scientific, but taste and balance and the other stuff, those are going to be a little bit subjective. That's why I love that the scale is weighted more on melt. Melt is 10 weight. So if you got a 5 out of 5, that's 50 out of your 200 points. That's a quarter of your entire score. It's determined straight 25% of what your grade for your hash is determined based on how well it melts. So if you were, like, going to hash school and I'm your teacher and I'm grading your shit, it's like, how well does that shit melt? That's a quarter of your grade. Then you've got your stability, appearance, aroma, taste, smoothness, body, complexity, balance, intensity, duration, overall pleasure, and uniqueness. Those are, let's see, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. 90 out of 200. So that's like about half of your grade is determined by all those other things. But each one just has 10 points of it. So it's like your aroma, if you have a really good smelling hash, you could crush the smell, but maybe miss the appearance. And that's why I love this scale because, like, it's so easy to say 10 out of 10. You know, if you're at, like, a judges panel and you watch, like, the Olympic divers and you see them do, like, a triple front flip with three spins and then do a dive, and you're like, what made that one a 10 but the other one was a 7? Like, it's really hard to really – because you don't know what their rubric is, so to speak. And this, it's like, there's no real mystery to, if Frenchie gives you a 100 out of 200, and he says, all right, your melt was a 7 out of 10, your stability was a 0, your appearance was a 3. You know, you can figure out what you have to work on, and then go back through your process and make yourself a better hash maker. And that's what I've done. Like, I graded my last hash, and I'll tell you, my melt was close to full melt, but there's a little bit of tiny amount of residue left on the nail.
Okay.
And I'm fine with that. I mean, it's the color is, like, really gold. I posted a picture on my Instagram, so anybody who wants to check it out, there's also a little bit of information on how I dried this particular batch, which I think is why I maybe didn't get the full melt perfectly. I tried a little bit different method because I was really busy. The first day after I made it, I just sort of pressed it into really thin slabs before I was able to process it into those flakes I talked about to dry it more properly. And so that might have affected my melt, like I was talking about. And I bet you my stability, when if I was to process it into a temple ball, wouldn't be perfect because my drying technique wasn't perfect. I didn't test it because we smoked the portion of the hash that I processed so far, mostly on 4th of July. Like, I brought a couple grams down, and between six people, we were, like, all medicated on our boat trip for 4 hours and didn't even go through our whole 2 grams. Really? So it was a great experience. And I'm talking, like, we had everyday users all feeling, like, very, very well medicated.
Right.
And it was a great experience for me because it's hard to maybe distance yourself and not think your stuff smokes great. I love to see other people try my stuff because, like, I liked it. I've grown many times, and I've had stuff that I didn't like. My last run, I would say, looked worse than any other I've ever grown, but it smoked and tasted, and the effects were as good or better than, you know, some of the stuff in the past, which is mostly based on the genetics I chose. Like, the Blue Dream from Humboldt Seeds is awesome. I love Super Silver Haze. I love DJ Short Blueberry. They cross those two, and it makes a great new genetic, or not new, but it makes that genetic rendition very, very appealing for me.
Sure.
And I've had other strains, like, you know, I've smoked too much Afghani in my lifetime. If you just give me an Afghan Kush, that's going to, like, give me couch lock and set my eyes low and make me tired and granted, it has great pain relief. I'd rather have like a Granddaddy Purple or something of that nature for my pain. Like Girl Scout cookies, for whatever reason, those happen to work for me a little better. So everyone's different, you know, and that's the beauty. It's like with growing and with making hash, you can always get better unless you're arrogant, unless you're a know-it-all who's like, I'm the best. I've got it all figured out. Korean natural farming is the only way to go. All organic, bro. Hell yeah. Fuck hydro. And it's like, you're going to miss out on that guy who's growing that fucking bomb-ass hydro, you know? Exactly. Try the hydro. See why it's not as good or see why it might be better.
Right.
Exactly. We touched on that last time for sure about how the community can be a little bit childish at times with, you know, the competitiveness of, you know, one community within the cannabis community, like hydro versus organic soil. And I think every strain, Kevin Jodry talked about this on his selection process video, another hour-long YouTube video I recommend everyone watch. Kevin, J-O-D-R-E-Y, Kevin Jodry, or Jodry, I don't know how he pronounces it. He's a Northern California breeder. He's been doing it for over 20 years, 30 years, I think, now. And he openly talked about how he selects for males to breed with. And how, like, the selection process of cannabis breeding is broken down. And from his point of view, it was really interesting because some people select before they've even smoked or tried any of the samples. Some people wait until they smoke the samples and see how that male produces a new flower. And it's super interesting. A lot of people just choose for yield. Some choose for color, and some choose for medical effects. And there's so much that can be learned that – I think everybody should keep on thinking that they're not the best. Be humble is what I'm saying, I guess, ultimately. Even if you grow great quality, like even if you're in the 30% club in flower and you've made your 30% THC mark or whatever, super high CBD, if that's what you're into, you know, keep doing it. Keep doing those things that have made you successful and be happy with your accomplishments. Like, I'm not saying don't relish the or cherish the times that are good, because everyone should be happy at harvest. You know, you spent months of work and you made a product, and you should be proud of yourself, but don't think that it's over and that you can't improve. Right. Even on your best run, there's something, you know, maybe you could have given it a little bit more light or a little less light and tried something different, maybe something that no one's ever even done before. Or, you know, instead of just listening to the nutrient cycle exactly, backing off or adding more at certain times of the cycle to listen to the demands of the plant and stuff that just you get better with over time. And bringing it back to hash, you know, just making sure that you do understand the steps of the process will help you even be a more informed consumer. So even if you're not making it yourself, I would go and watch that Frenchie Cannoli video, because he is a figurehead in our community. I mean, cannabis has, like, been underground for so long. If somebody like him, or in the past Jack Herrera, and even, like, to an extent, Tommy Chong, and these guys who and women who put themselves out there to spread the information, whether it's to just help people get their own medicine or to help change laws, it's so important that we understand who sort of taught us and showed us the way, because everybody learned from somebody, you know. Most people didn't just figure it out on their own.
Right. Yeah. I mean, nobody's I guess people are, I guess, naturally better at it than other people. But even at that, I mean, nobody is really a true natural, you know. I mean, it does.
What is a natural, right? If you don't ever have a book, if like you just had a cannabis seed and no one ever told you anything, where would you even start? You wouldn't know what food to give it. You wouldn't know what medium to grow in. You wouldn't know the light cycle. You'd have to spend your entire lifetime to figure out how to grow mids at best. So why do that when, like I said, I'm a scientist. Stand on the shoulders of giants. The people before us that have done the research and put it out there, let's take that research and advance it. Exactly. Instagram is, it's sad to say this, Instagram is the forefront of research for cannabis right now, along with sites like Grow Diaries and other sites like IC Mag and all these forums where people post and have been posting for years, legally or not,
what they're growing, how they're growing it, how much nutrients they're giving it, what temperature it is, what humidity it is, how much light, how what kind of light, what the environment, everything is being documented now. So I can go on and say, I've got this seed, this, you know, lemon Wookiees, you know, lemon strain crossed with Wookiees from Bodhi seeds. And it was never released, but, you know, it was a tester years ago. And I go on, I Google it, and I find on forums there's like three phenotypes documented. And I can go and see, like, if I grow this, this is what I can expect flowering time, for stretch, for the color, for the smell, and even to the effects of it. It's so fascinating that because we're federally legal here in the U.S. and many places still, that the research really isn't being done in a way that it should be. UC Irvine just posted that they're upset because they can't fully test the way that they need to. They're spending millions of dollars, and because it's still federally illegal, they can't conduct the experiments in a setting where they have immunity, because there hasn't been any federal immunity granted to allow big colleges like UC San Diego and UC Irvine that have, like, UC San Diego has a $4.8 million grant that they're using to study the effects of CBD on autism and seeing how it helps alleviate some of those effects. So the only problem is, like, it's potentially risky for the families that are participating, for the researchers themselves, for the universities. And they could have funding pulled from them. They could have all these other things, like, not from the people that were, you know, cannabis friendly and decided to give that $4.8 million, but from the state of California or from, you know, because so many federal laws dictate how companies and businesses and even schools can operate. It's kind of crazy. The environment that we're left in, it's still, I'll say, very guerrilla and very black market or gray market, in that you and I are learning from each other, and so are other people online, but we're not doing it at universities. We're doing it on forums, and we're doing it on social media under potentially pseudonames, you know?
Right.
So even though I'm in a completely legal state, I choose to not reveal my identity in full or even where I'm at in specific, because there are still people that will report activity, whether it's legal or not, and you can get yourself in some sort of legal battle, which no one wants to be a part of. And on top of that, you don't want to get robbed. There's jackers, there's stealers, thieves. I've seen, you know, reports on the forums that I was just talking about of they're telling you to watch out for this person because he's notorious for coming and stealing full plants in trucks and just taking them off of people's outdoor farms right when they're ready to be harvested or before harvest.
Jeez.
And it's like, that's all the negative stuff that we don't want in the cannabis industry. And for anyone in the state of California, I know you mentioned off air that we had a lot of California listeners. Most of my followers, I would say, are predominantly in California. I'm a California medical grower myself, so I understand that that's probably why, you know, I put it out there on my page, so a lot of them want to see what we're all talking about. And here in California, even with our current legality, a lot of people would tell you Prop 64 has actually probably done more harm than good. We went from 1996 to 2017 with Prop 215, the Compassionate Use Act of 1996 in California, which allowed medical cannabis. We had a great market, but unfortunately, there was not as much testing for pesticides, heavy metals, insecticides, things of that nature that people don't want in their medicine. It was almost impossible to find proper testing like we're seeing now in Colorado and Washington and the other legal states, where you could see, oh, this has 25% THC, 8% CBD, blah, blah, blah. There's no this, no that. You know what you're getting. Before, you sort of had to figure it out for yourself. Like when I told you I went to the same doctor for years, but they just gave me a medical recommendation, which allows me to go to a dispensary or go to a delivery service and find my own medicine for myself. Now, I have to put the onus on me to say, I need to find a source that is going to grow organic, is going to grow without pesticides, and do it in a way that is clean because I'm using it as a medicine. I'm not just trying to get high and have fun.
Right.
Some people don't care about smoking potentially, you know, dangerous things,
right,
or harsh things that are going to make them cough and you know, feel not clear-headed.
Sure. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's all, you know, it's a bug room, but yet again, it's really not. And
yeah. Well, and now, especially with, like the legalization, you've got the people that paid all this money to get legal are now reporting all the black market growers.
Right.
And many of themselves actually were black market growers to even get the money to afford growing legally, you know, so it's interesting that the dichotomy that's going on between the legal and black market here in California. There was a big thing. There's this guy, Humboldt Sesh. He works for the Bureau of Cannabis Control or with them in California. And he's been like going on all the private Sesh Instagram pages where like people are meeting up and smoking and exchanging meds and potentially, allegedly, doing so in a not so legal manner, according to all the state and local guidelines sometimes. And I mean, this guy is potentially getting people put in jail in a legal state over maybe doing something that most of us would agree is probably completely harmless. There's no harm being done in a patient to patient exchange. If I am to give somebody medicine that I grew for medicine that they grew, no money is exchanged. I think that's actually a better ordeal than going to a dispensary and you know, paying cash and then having taxes involved. But from the state's point of view, they don't want that. They want to make revenue off of it, which I completely understand. It's a business, the government, they have to keep running and operating. And if they're going to have something that's looked at as sort of immoral in some states still and like wrong or bad, that even some people in our state look down on here in California. Not everyone sports it. Only 60 to 70% of people do. That still means 30% of people here don't want it.
Right.
So it's like they have to justify it by making money off of it. And if they're not making money off of it because it's in the black market, they want to keep putting those people in jail. So that's why I keep getting my medical rec every year, because it assures if I get pulled over and I have my medicine on me, they have a 24-hour website that the police can go to that will verify I am actually a medical patient, and that affords me the freedom to not be arrested.
Okay.
Which not other people don't have that. Like the 21 and up, the medical adult users don't necessarily have that if they're violating certain laws and regulations, which are much more strict because they have lower amounts that they can carry. And each city now has a ton of power to regulate, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But that's totally unhash related, but I just wanted to give a shout out to all my California listeners and all your California listeners and followers, because, you know, you guys made the right choice, found the Sunshine State, the Golden State, whatever you want to call us. We've got great weed, great weather, and amazing people.
Right.
So.
That's true, man. Well, you know, I think in terms of the show, I think that's about it for this one, Jack. You spoke a lot. A lot of good information.
Yeah.
You can check Jack out at Instagram.com/ Jack Screenstalk. Follow him. Send him a message if that's okay with you.
Yeah, totally. I've actually been very interested in seeing what people reach out about. I had a few different listeners reach out to me. I was able to get back to them. It might not be immediate. I do have a full-time job and family at home. I just got two new kittens because my other cat passed, so it's helping the grieving process, having some new life.
Right.
But, yeah, man, I appreciate the shout-out. Yeah, it's Jack Greenstock on Instagram. And look forward to, like I said, I'm growing some new testers from Humboldt Seed Organization. I got some Platinum Yeti, which is some Platinum Cookies and Yeti OG cross. And I also have Sour Diesel crossed with 76 Afghan. I got six of those that are germinated right now and going to be moving to the tent here in a few weeks.
Sweet, man. Sweet, yeah. Well, listen, Jack, you know, I appreciate you coming on the show, and, I hope to talk to you again soon.
Hey, man, it was another great time. Thanks again for having me. Thank you to all the listeners and the Chief Home Grow followers.
definitely check out the Cheap Home Grow website. Not only my podcast, but there's like actual doctors that come on. I'm just a medical grower and a hash connoisseur, fanatic, and maker. But there are tons of other great podcasts that you should definitely make sure to check out.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much for that shout out. And I hope to talk to you again soon, man.
All right. Have a good one. Peace.
You too. Take it easy.
Thank you for listening to the Cheap Home Grow podcast. We do our best to bring you quality content. Let's grow together. Please hit the subscribe button and take time to share this podcast with a friend. Visit cheaphomegrow.com for our database of interviews and information. Until next time, be safe and grow easy.